Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card, making personal loans more personal.
Yes, Joanna Fortune, clinical psychotherapist specialising in child and adult psychotherapy, joins me now to go through some of the questions you sent in for the parenting slot. As ever, text or email your questions to afternoon@newstalk.ie or text 53106. And if we don't get to them today, we'll hold them over for next week. Joanna, how are you?
Good, how are you, Tom?
Very well indeed. You weren't staying abreast of the developments with a little raccoon over in America.
No, I missed that, I have
to say. The world is gripped.
Yeah, so it seems. I'm going to look that up on my way home.
Up on the 23rd floor. We're not exactly where he is at the moment. He went onto the roof and the roof. And we're not 100% sure. So we'll let you know if we see.
I'll keep my eyes out.
Do please. Right then. A lot of heat-related questions for you this week.
Not surprising.
Not surprising at all. The first is it safe to have newborn babies out in this heat? Obviously, I'm putting sunscreen on my two-year-old. But what is the recommended time for kids to be left out in the sun? He hasn't sweat in this heat, and I assume that would be a concern.
Yeah, I mean, of course it would be. And I think it's something to keep the word concern in there. It's good to be concerned about children in the heat regardless. So the general guidelines would be that under 6 months old, they should not be exposed to the sun or out in the heat at all, because their skin is still too sensitive at that age for sunscreen. And obviously you can't have them out without it. Between 6 and 12 months, they can have sunscreen, but make sure you're using a minimum SPF of 15, and that you put it on, say, 30 minutes before you go out, and reapply it every 2 hours, and be vigilant about that. I think it's good just to be vigilant in general, because just one sunburn in childhood actually raises the risk of developing a melanoma. So this is
just one.
Just one would increase
the
risk.
We are a generation who have several.
You know, so it is something we do need to really, this is a good question at this time of year. I think as well, if you're talking, as this person is, about toddlers, you want to use something like a water resistant spray on sunscreen, because, you know, they wriggle, they move. It's like a wrestling match just to try and get it onto them. Again, use at least an SPF 15, ideally higher. And again, this is about parents knowing if you've a really fair skinned child, go higher than that. I think I just want to flag as well that balancing out the UVA and the UVB protection in your sunscreen. So if you have an SPF of 30 or even higher, you want to make sure it has 4 or 5 stars on the bottle. It's the star rating that's going to... So you could have a factor 30 that only has 2 or 3 stars, and a factor 15 that has 5 stars, and arguably you're better covered.
I never heard of the stars before. Yeah. I find this quite complicated, because the minute you said 15, I was thinking we've been on 50 for a while.
Oh, yeah. And as in my house, it's 52, but we're all like, I only have to think about the sun and I'm going to burn. So, you know, I think you have to use common sense with this.
Right.
But watch for the star rating on the bottle. I think that can be really reassuring. They range greatly in price, but if it has the stars, it's good to go.
Okay. Never heard of star rating before. That's
keep a young child in the shade between 10 and 4 typically, or at least with access to shade. That could be sitting under a tree. That could be making sure they've a cap with a brim on it, something that covers the back of their neck, even a long sleeve loose cotton top, hats, sunglasses. Some clothing actually has UPF on the label, which means it also is protective against the sun and the UVA rays. So you can also look into that, and lots of fluid. Of course, no water if they're under 6 months. Stick with breast milk or formula. That's enough to keep them hydrated. But over 6 months, lots of fluids.
Caution is the big word.
And just being sensible.
Second question for you. We have a problem with our 3-year-old daughter, which is she will not go to the toilet without myself or my wife. If she has a sleepover with her nana, she will hold it all night and day until we pick her up, and then she will go with one of us. A few days ago, she went to the zoo with my sister-in-law and a few of her cousins. They were gone most of the day. She was asked a few times at the zoo did she need to use the toilet, and said no. This resulted in her wetting herself on the way home in the car. She also will not go in creche, which she attends twice a week. When we collect her in the afternoon, she is ready to burst. We are anxious to get this sorted before she starts school in September. What do we do?
Oh my goodness, my heart just goes out to her, the poor little thing, because that's such a worry for parents as well. It's really important to start from a place of seeking to understand, why won't she go? Is she afraid? For me, I'd be exploring a mixture of fear and embarrassment here. Is she afraid in such a way that has she experienced, you know, the hand dryers in some public toilets can be really scary and noisy. So has she experienced something like that, or the toilet paper being too rough? So she's like, well, I know what it's like at home, and that's the only place I want to use it. So I think there could be that. It could be the sense of embarrassment as well, that, you know, it can be kind of gross going into a public toilet with lots of cubicles. They can be a bit stinky. You know, she might be embarrassed or afraid someone will walk in the door. She might be afraid to lock the door, that she won't be able to unlock it. There could be a combination of factors, right, but it's a good starting point to seek to understand that.
Yeah.
And I think I'd be starting now, bring her to a variety of public toilets when you're out, go with her, even if no one needs to go. So she experiences lots of public bathrooms, different types. Don't scold or shame her for the current situation, obviously, and I don't think that you are, but discuss openly, you know, and using child language, discuss openly how everyone farts, everyone does stinky poos, everyone makes noises in the toilet, in case that's a factor. So normalize all of these toileting behaviors for her. I think I'd also be really keen to schedule bathroom breaks when you're out, where everybody goes to the bathroom every 20 minutes. And that is everyone, not that whole, you know, the way we turn to young children, we say, do you need to go to the toilet? And they're going, well, I'm having a lot of fun. Do I really need to go and be the one who misses what's going on here? Whereas if everyone goes and it's, you know, I don't need to go, that's fine. We're just going to sit there anyway and check. Okay. And that it becomes a thing that you sit there, you check, do you need to go? Everyone's going, and schedule those breaks in. Because obviously, these are kind of behavioural things you can do. But from a parental point of view, there could be medical implications in terms of her developing an enlarged bladder or a skin irritation or even a urinary tract infection the way it is. And I think that's a huge worry. Consider a GP visit, especially if she's been doing this for quite a while, just to make sure everything is okay. And finally, on this one, I thought, you know, at her age, and she's, you know, she's going to be starting to get curious about her body and able to understand more things. You could teach her that her pee should be a clear or very light yellow color. And how we make sure it stays that color is we drink lots of water and we go to the toilet regularly. And if we leave it too long, our pee changes color, and that's not good for our bodies. So almost teaching her a way of keeping check on herself. And it's something that will go, she might be interested to see, well, what color is my
pee? You're looking for an in, really, aren't you?
It's really that to engage her. And just everyone in the family being on the same page in terms of how they're responding, and the key being don't scold or shame her. But I at the same time would take this seriously, because she can't go all day without going to the toilet.
A texter says, my daughter had a similar issue. She says she prefers the feeling of the bathroom in our house. That's where she feels most safe. We're working on getting her used to different atmospheres. We find McDonald's or the indoor soft play centre are good places, because she's so much fun there, and somewhat distracted when she pees.
Yeah, it's the distraction can be really helpful, because again, though, it's about the fear and embarrassment factor. But that's a really sensible thing. Get them used to a variety of public toilets.
Lidl do very good affordable sun cream with the stars.
Yes, they do.
I've seen well-known brands with not as good star rating as Lidl, and I wouldn't even consider buying it in Lidl before this. I'm delighted to hear that. We have a quick break to get out of the way, and we've more questions to come. So 53106 if you have a parenting issue today. You're very welcome back to the Moncrief Show. It's Tom Dunn sitting in for Sean today, and Joanna Fortune is with us answering your parenting questions. This one for you, holiday related. We're bringing our 18-month-old daughter on holidays in June to Spain. Have you any tips for the flight for us? I'm a really bad flyer and I don't want to project my nerves and stress onto my daughter. My husband isn't great either. So if you have any advice, you'll be helping the whole family.
Yeah, you're so brave. If no one's loving the flying, that the fact that you're getting on a flight, you know...
Didn't leave Ireland for 5 years after we had children.
That is a big undertaking. I understand that.
Yes.
I do. But I think that you're going, there are two issues here. One is that as parents, you've got to find a way to stay calm yourselves during the flight, because your child is co-regulated with you. So if you're anxious, hyper-aroused and going to lose it, your child's going to pick up on that, and they're going to match your regulated state. So they're also going to get hyper-aroused. And that is not what you want with an 18-month-old on a flight. So I would say, you know, focus on what's going to help instead of going, oh, the things I hate about flying are A, B, C, D, E. You know, I hate all these things. Try and stop yourself and have a think about, so what would make it easier for me? What would make this flight more pleasurable to manage. And as best you can, take those steps. Bear in mind that having a small child enables you now to get on the flight quicker than anyone else. So it eliminates things that can be quite triggering for people who are nervous of flying, like queuing, waiting, standing, you know, those things that just build up the anxiety. You're going to get on the flight first. You know, feel free when you check in to let the airline know that you're anxious flyers, and they can be really helpful and supportive around that. Beyond that, I mean, look, you could consider something like some hypnotherapy sessions, which can be really helpful around a, you know, issue specific thing like this about flying. Then secondly, the issue about, you know, what do you do with an 18 month old on a flight? Because I'm one of those people that I really discourage parents from apologizing to other passengers for having a child on the flight. I don't think anybody should be handing out little baggies with earbuds and sweets and notes and "I'm sorry, I'm on the flight." Children are entitled to fly. They are entitled to go on holidays. And, you know, we all have good and bad days when we're traveling. That isn't child specific. So don't feel like you've got to apologize. If she gets upset, you do whatever you need to do in the moment to try and soothe her, meeting her needs, not the needs of your co-passengers. Something that I do think can be really useful is to pack a little sensory bag into your handbag getting on the plane. And a sensory bag for me now, it could be just like a Ziploc bag, a freezer bag, and in it you put, bearing in mind now your milliliters for traveling, so a little thing of bubbles you can get, you know, the party bag size bubbles, a little thing of that, something like a little sort of a little round ball of homemade Play-Doh that you can put in there as well, a feather, a cotton ball, a silk hanky, something textured like that. And you have these in the bag, and if your child gets dysregulated, you take out the bubbles, you take out the Play-Doh, you roll it, you pass it between each other, you rub her hand or her foot with the feather or the cotton ball, you do peekaboo with the silk hanky.
Yeah.
And you've got these really easy games. And again, it fits in a freezer bag, but it's going to enable you to do what I'd call person-to-person co-regulation, which is the connection, but you're doing it through play, which is the language of children. You're not going to soothe your child by saying, "Hush now,
no,
stop now." That's not going,
not going to work
at all. So don't even drive yourself crazy with that.
Text says, just feed the baby for the flight and that will help with the ears and the baby will probably sleep
definitely
after it as
have
well.
A little boppy for them to suck.
I've often flown with small children. If you get the front seats on the right hand side, they give you a cot that snaps onto the bulkhead.
Did not know that, no.
Means the child can relax, try feeding on takeoff and landing as it helps the ears to pop. So Shane and Wicklow. And another texture. So my sister at the age of 5 wouldn't sit on the loo and kept going outside. Turns out she thought a shark would come up and bite her bum.
Children have all kinds of notions and fantasies around this. So it's important to get to the root of what is the objection.
Could be kind of crazy. I heard you talk last week about a kid who had a terrible appetite. Mine is the complete opposite. My son is only 3 and he wants to eat all of the time. He never stops. I have never known anybody with such an appetite. He generally has seconds of every meal and snacks on top of that. He is tall for a 3-year-old, but I'm worried about the weight issue is going to catch up with him. I don't know how to curb his appetite and stop him eating so much. I'm worried what he'll do at sleepovers. I don't want him eating his friends out of house and home.
Okay, I'm going to pause the last bit and say park that. You know, he's 3. You're nowhere near that stage of development. So try as best you can to stay in the moment. You don't mention anywhere if he's overweight. In fact, the inference I pick up is he's not because he's tall.
That's what I saw too.
So the first thing I do with children who seem to eat a lot is try and differentiate between the difference of hunger and appetite. You know, hunger is you are hungry. Your body is telling you you're empty. Put some food in here. Appetite is more about I enjoy food, the sensory experience, the tastes. I have pleasure in food. So, you know, you might have a hungry little boy on your hands because he's tall. Perhaps he's very active. He needs more food. So it's absolutely fine for children to have second portions and to have snacks. They should be having snacks. As best you can, watch that the snacks are healthy so that it's hunger driven rather than I really like sugary biscuits, because who doesn't want to sit down and eat loads and loads of those? But making sure that they're healthy means he's only going to eat those snacks when he actually needs them. The other things I would look at is just assessing the kind of foods. We're all, as parents these days, so focused on feeding, and rightly so, our children healthy, nutritious food. But just make sure that he is, that they tend to be in a lot in the fruit and veg market. Make sure he's getting carb-based foods as well, and more what you'd call filling foods, that he may need just a little bit more bulk with his meals. So you could look at that. He also could very well be going through a growth spurt, especially that you've got a tall kid on your hands, and that can make them hungrier. So keep him active, use distraction. You know, sometimes small children tell you they're hungry when actually they're thirsty. So maybe when he comes to you saying he's still hungry, offer water first and have him take a big drink, wait a few minutes and see is he still hungry then. Watch things like food associations, because sometimes if children always get a snack in the car, they associate being in the car with having a snack.
Okay.
Now, it's perfectly fine to snack in the car, but just making sure that's because they're due a snack or they're hungry, as opposed to it pacifies them while you're driving, because otherwise they form an association that every time I sit here, you give me a snack. Where's my snack? And it's not hunger driven.
I'm going to have to watch that one myself as you say it. I'm having a baby in September. It's my first. I have two large dogs in my house and people are telling me I will have to find homes for my dogs. They say I can't have a newborn and dogs in the house together. What is your experience of this? I really don't know what to let. I don't want to let them go. I've had them for 6 and 8 years, respectively. I am really upset about this. My God, what a conundrum to
this
be in.
This is absolutely. I don't know who they are that are telling you the dogs have to go.
Everybody, I'd say. But all of the surrounding people, families and friends.
I think do some, you know, investigating yourself into this, because lots of children and babies are raised with family dogs. And there are obviously guidelines, you know, to doing this. The one thing I would really pick up in this and want to flag is that no woman who is due a baby in September needs to be really upset at this stage. Mm. It's quite the opposite. So let's get this sorted so that you can relax and focus on what
you
need to do.
You do hear those stories though, don't you?
Yeah,
that
you
a dog sees the baby as, you know, lower in the pack order and feels their place is being threatened.
And there is, I understand why people would say it, but I don't think it's a have to. I think it's more, well, what can you do, and being cautious. So introduce the dogs to things like new baby sights, smells, sounds from now on. You know, when you have the baby, whatever the baby wears first, particularly if you end up spending a night in hospital, that your partner or whomever could bring home the baby grow, the baby wore, let the dog smell it. Things like that that you can do. Brush up on dog training, because you've had them 6 or 8 years. So you and the dogs are in a rhythm, but maybe go back to some basics of training, obedience training, things like that. Ensure that somebody is going to be available to still walk your dogs when the babies come home, because a bored dog will act out, certainly. And never, ever, ever leave a dog and a baby unsupervised, and never put the baby on the floor with a dog. I'm going to just finally on this one say that dogstrust.ie have a flyer about this issue.
Okay.
So it would be worth looking that up, or even reaching out to them and having, you know, a conversation describing the type of dogs you have. They might have further advice.
Dogstrust.ie
has a PDF on this.
Okay, maybe some listeners as well may have experienced that too. 53106 is the text number. Now, my daughter is almost 10 years old and she runs competitively. She is really so talented and a strong, determined girl. Last week after a training session, her running coach told her, "I didn't see you putting in the extra effort today." When we got home, she was really upset and told me she didn't want to go back. It seems he's been saying this to her for quite a bit, and I think she has lost her confidence. Do you think she's too young to be involved competitively? I know she loves it, but I don't want to force her into something too serious. It's meant to be fun, and now she's just gotten sad about it.
Oh, coach. I mean, the first thing, look, sometimes pressure to succeed at such a young age can be utterly overwhelming for children. And I think that's what this question comes from. It's more important to foster and encourage a love of the sport, and that matters more than the winning. Because some competition is absolutely fine for children, but over competition is a problem and can be impactful on their mental health in a negative way. I'm going to suggest that you speak to the coach and explain what's happened, because they may have no idea their words have had or are having this effect. Speak to them about the difference between fostering talent or encouraging participation, and maybe it's something you and the coach could work on collaboratively, that the coach sees his role to foster her talent, you see your role as parent to encourage her participation, and maybe a collaborative approach on this is going to meet all of her needs. I'm going to say to you, encourage her to stay involved, and you know, that this is something that you and she can talk about. Encourage the participation and praise her effort over outcome. That's really easy for you to do as parent. A coach may see their remit in another way. But as I said, go back and have a chat with the coach on this one.
Great stuff, Siobhan. Thanks very much
for that. Thank you.
Bit of reaction on the dogs and the babies. I was told the same thing regarding dogs. I was very careful introducing the dogs to the baby, never leaving them alone. They now love each other. And my daughter is 4. Call Clever Companions for a family dog training. It's really important to train your dogs to accept your baby and so everyone can live happily together. There are lots of things you can do to prepare your dogs for the new arrival. Wow. It echoes preparing other children for the new arrival, doesn't it? My niece and nephew were both born in a dog to Newfoundlands. They are talking through their arse.
Whoever they are.
Exactly. Joanne, thanks very much
for that.
You can listen back to the parenting podcast on newstalk.com. After the break, the changing world.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card, making personal loans more personal.